Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside.
Special episode number 10, Spring Equinox 2009.
Hello, welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Gary.
And I'm Ruth. You're listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, found on iTunes and at CelticMythPodShow.com, telling you all of the ancient stories of our Celtic ancestors.
8 times a year, at the time of the ancient festivals, we'll also bring you a holiday special, with music and stories from modern artists. And this show is the holiday special for the spring equinox in 2009. What have we got for you in this show?
Well, we've got 4 great pieces of music for you, a great excerpt from a fascinating book, Horns of Power, about an ancient Celtic deity, a very moving story by Willie Meikle, the renowned Scottish author, a powerful Irish poem, and another visit to the Dragon's Head to see if Duncan has another tale for us.
Oh, right. We better get on with it then. Let's have some news and views. The first bit of news we'd like to bring you is we finally figured out how BitTorrent technology works. If you want to download all of the Irish mythological cycle, well, so far anyway, and the holiday specials for 2008 in one download, then pop along to the show notes for this episode on CelticMythPodShow.com and the torrent details are there. Having said that, until lots of people start seeding them, you'll probably be downloading them from my machine and I'll try and keep it on as much as possible for you.
Have there been many downloads of the torrents then?
About 8 or 9 in the first week that I set it up. So I'm quite pleased, really.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Great stuff. And what about your hard drive scramble?
Well, that's the joy of computers, isn't it? I had to reformat last week and I think I've lost some emails. So if you've sent me any emails and haven't had a reply, please, please can you resend them? My apologies for this. Blame Windows. And you wanted to say something, didn't you?
Yes, I did. We're going to be starting a section on the website for your work. If you've been inspired by the stories and tales to write a story or a poem, or make music, draw a picture, or whatever, and you'd like to share it with the rest of us, send it along to us and we'll put it on the website for the whole clan to enjoy. But don't forget to keep it family friendly.
Good stuff. And finally, we'd like to wish you all a very happy St. Patrick's Day for the 17th of March just gone. Hope you got your iPhone download, guys. We hope you didn't drink too much, and may the luck of the Irish always bless you.
Yes, a very happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody.
Let's find out a little about the spring equinox. The spring equinox.
The spring, or vernal equinox, celebrates the renewed life of the earth that comes with the spring. It is a solar festival, celebrated when the length of the day and the night are equal, which happens twice a year, at the spring and the autumn equinox. This turn in the seasons has been celebrated by cultures throughout history, who held festivals for their gods and goddesses at this time of year. Aphrodite from Cyprus, Hathor from Egypt, and Ostara of Scandinavia. The Celts continued the tradition with more festivities at this time of year.
Today, pagans continue to celebrate the coming of spring. They attribute the changes that are going on in the world to an increase in the powers of their god and goddess, the personifications of the great force that is at work in the world. At the time of the spring equinox, the god and the goddess are often portrayed as the Green Man and Mother Earth. The Green Man is said to be born of Mother Earth in the depths of winter, and to live through the rest of the year until he dies at Samhain. To celebrate spring equinox, some pagans carry out particular rituals. For instance, a woman and a man are chosen to act out the roles of spring god and goddess, playing out courtship and symbolically planting seeds. Egg races, egg hunts, egg eating and egg painting are also traditional activities at this time of year.
Yes, it makes you wonder, doesn't it? With the equinox and Easter, Ostara, being so close, whether they used to celebrate them together.
True.
Mind you, it's hard to imagine the ancient Celts with chocolate eggs.
Not so hard with modern Celts. I love them. Shall we have some music?
Yes, good idea. We'll start with the track from the new album by Claymore, Every Bottle Dry. Claymore play a high-energy Celtic music, and this track is called Spot On. So take it away, boys.
Where do you go when the party is over? How will you drink if your pint glass is dry? What will you read when no tale has been written? How will you say how if you can't say why? How will you smile if you feel only sadness? Who are you with if they don't come along? How will you see when you have no vision? How will you feel when your rights are song is being sung? Your path lies before you. What will you do to keep your life spot on? What will you say when all lines have been spoken? How will you speak when no words? Guitar is broken. How will you dance when the music is gone? Where will you drive when no road can be driven? How will you ride if you don't have the fare? Where will you sail with no breeze behind you? How will you soar if you're not in the air? Well, your role is being written and your song is being sung. Your path lies before you.
Doing to keep life spot on, and that's keep the stories coming and the show going.
Yes. Thanks for that track, guys. That's got us all going, hasn't it?
Oh, it has.
Now let's turn our attention to an excerpt from a wonderful book about the ancient gods, in particular those that had horns. The book is fairly unique in that more than half of it is packed with articles, and the remainder is reports of modern experiences with these gods. The book is called Horns of Power, and is edited by Sarita Deste, who's also the author of the piece we're going to read. Tell us about it.
Have you ever seen a picture of the Gundestrup cauldron?
Yes, the large bowl with all the figures on it.
That's the one, and we'll have a picture of the cauldron in our show notes. Well, the large central figure is thought to be Cair Nunnos, who was a Celtic deity of fertility and animals, as far as we can gather, and this article is all about him and his history.
Excellent! Superb for the rising sap of spring, then.
Oh, yes. The Witch God Cair Nunnos by Sorita d'Este. Primal urge of nature's power, horned god of the animals, bestower of wealth and fertility. Cair Nunnos is the deity who is probably cited as being the horned god of witchcraft more than any other. His name can be found in most books written on the subject of modern paganism and Western initiatory witchcraft traditions, such as Wicca. As a Celtic god, he first emerges in what is modern-day France, from where his worship then seems to have spread to other European countries, including modern-day Germany, Italy, and Romania. The first piece of evidence for Cair Nunnos is the altar carving found in Notre Dame in Paris in 1710 CE, which read Ernunno, E-R-N-U-N-N-O, with the first and last letters lost through erosion. This carving doesn't seem to show an antlered god, as Cair Nunnos is popularly perceived today, but rather a god with shorter horns. There has been speculation that the horns seen on this image are in fact those of a bull, rather than those of a stag. It is generally accepted that the name Cair Nunnos simply means horned one, but this was not always the case. As seen in Antoine Banier's The Mythology and Fables of the Ancients, 1739. In this famous work, Banier gave the meaning of horned spear, thereby suggesting a more aggressive or maybe even bellicose nature. Cair Nunnos is now generally believed to be derived from the Proto-Indo-European root Cyrno. This is the same word that gave rise to the Gaelic Cernon, the Welsh Carn, the Latin Cornu, and the Germanic Hornas, all of which mean horn. The Latin Cornu also gave rise to words such as cornucopia, the horn of plenty, and coronet, a small crown. This latter is particularly interesting, as it indicates the position of the horns at the crown, and also links the horns to royalty, reminding us of the old adage that the king and the land are one. From the same original word comes the Greek word keraunos, meaning thunderbolt, further hinting at a connection to the power of the stormy sky.
Recent decades, inscriptions and carvings found around Europe have shown that the Paris altar was not, as previously thought, an isolated depiction of this deity. In fact, evidence for this god seems to, in actuality, be rather widespread. Cair Nunnos was mentioned in an inscription which was uncovered at Polenza in northern Italy. And what seems to be a depiction of a horned god fitting his description was found nearby at Valcamonica. Variations of his name have been found at Verisbatac, Romania, where he's referred to as Cairnos, and as Deo Cair Nuico at Seinsel-Rehlant in Germany. A Greek inscription which was found near Montagnac, France, is dedicated to Cair Nunnos. Of course, the variations in the way that this name is written are inevitable and commonplace in areas where the Romans recorded the names of local deities. This was especially true of the names of the Celtic deities, due to the fact that Celtic culture was oral with no written language. However, When considering that the name and its variants mean horned one, and looking at the diversity of images, is it perhaps more likely that Kerenounos was a title, and that as such it might have been used to refer to any horned god? Using a title for a deity name was a common practice, as can be seen by looking at the names of other well-known Celtic deities. For example, Morrigan, Great Queen, Dagda, Good God, Epona, Divine Horse, and Iallonus, God of the Glade. It might also be that it was a term used for a class of spiritual beings, for example, the Matras, Mothers, and the Genii Cuculati, Hooded Ones. While some characteristics are thus common for the type of deity represented by the title, this would also explain variations. Although there is some debate as to the nature of the horns on the Notre Dame Kerenounos, which seem more like bull horns, the other images, some of which are centuries older, clearly show him as a stag-horned god. The Val Carmonica image dates to around the 4th century BCE and shows antlers. However, if this were a title, then the horn one could have antlers, bull horns, or any sort of horns depending on the localized view.
The image of the horned figure on the Gundestrup cauldron is the best known image attributed to Kerenounos, and also shows him with antlers. This silver cauldron dates to between the 4th and 5th century BCE and was found in Denmark. It has been shown how this figure depicted on the cauldron is probably derived from the deity Pashupati, Lord of the Beasts, or Proto-Shiva. Pashupati was the main god of the Harappan culture of around 3000 BCE from the Indus Valley, and by this point he already had a huge amount in connection with Kerenounos. This point is reinforced by Alain Danielou in his work Gods of Love and Ecstasy, where he points out that
other symbols associated with the cult of Shiva, the erect phallus, the horned god, the bull, the snake, the ram, the lady of the mountain, are found in this cultural and agricultural complex, which starting from 6000 BC spread westward to Europe and Africa and eastward to southern Asia.
Moving to Romania and the name Kerenounos found there, we should also note that there has been evidence found there dating back to the period 5000 to 3000 BCE of a bull-horned god, also suggesting the existence of an earlier local god who assumed this name. Considering my suggestion that the name is a title, then it's possible that it was simply applied to any image of a horned male deity which fitted the local god, even though the image's origins may have been distant. On the Gundestrup cauldron, there is also a wolf near the Kerenounos figure, which is not an isolated occurrence amongst the images attributed to this god. And so we may consider the wolf as a sacred animal associated with him, as suggested by researchers Anne Ross and Miranda Green. As a very effective hunter, this would make sense. The Meagle slab in Perthshire, Scotland, which shows a Kerenounos-type figure, also has a wolf flanking it. Another interesting feature of the Val Carmonica image, and some of the others, like the classic Gundestrup cauldron image, is that he is not portrayed as being phallic. The Val Carmonica image shows instead the worshipper being noticeably phallic. Again, this fits if more than one deity is being depicted, with some gods being associated with fertility and others not.
Kerenounos is clearly associated with animals, as shown in the images of him or them. He is usually shown bearing a torque and a ram-horned serpent, a symbol of chthonic wisdom and transformation, and sometimes is surrounded by other animals. In fact, these particular symbols can be seen as the cult objects which positively identify an image as being a Cernunnos image. He is also known as the Lord of all wild things, a title which clearly demonstrates his role as an animal god.
When we look at the attributes that can be concretely associated with Cernunnos, it's interesting to see what is not there. Cernunnos has been incorporated into modern Wicca as the encompassing name for the horned god as the male principal. However, many of the functions he now bears are not seen in the ancient imagery, or are best hinted at and have been brought to the fore. This could be seen as an expression of roles more appropriate to the times, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. Thus, it seems likely that the role of underworld god was not one seen in depictions, although the chthonic nature of the ram-horned serpent could be seen as suggesting he did have chthonic connections, as could the wealth association.
As a solar god, the only image which would fit is the Mercury-like image of the god holding a wheel, which is also held by a larger non-horned figure on the Gundestrup cauldron. The wheel has 8 asymmetrical spokes on half that is visible, indicating that the total would be far greater, and is different from the usual 6 spokes seen borne by the wheel god in Celtic art. The wheel has been linked to the Gallic Celtic god Tyrannus, thunder, and the Roman god Jupiter as a solar symbol, and so this could provide a tentative link for the solar connection. What is clear is that Cernunnos, whether he was a specific god or whether his name was a title for a range of gods, has become far more widely worshipped and gained far more attributes than he had 2,000 years ago. Now he is worshipped worldwide as the divine male principal, and gods whose worship may have eclipsed his are now in shadow. The horned one has made the transition to the modern age, while still retaining the original characteristics that made him so popular. Truly, we can see through his success that Cernunnos bears the horns of power.
That was superb. There was such a great deal of information there. Thank you so much to Sarita for giving us permission to bring you this section from Horns of Power.
You'll be able to find an image of the Gundestrup cauldron, the references for this article, and more detail about this great book in the show notes for this episode at CelticMythPodShow.com/show notes.
So, let's have another piece of music.
Yes, and I've got one.
Ooh.
We've heard from the Bards of Mystic before, with their unique blend of music and storytelling. So let's listen to their track, The Warrior.
The warrior sat down heavily on the log. His young squire began to undo the buckles and straps that held the warrior's armor in place. He had been victorious in battle today. Again. "You know, Bard, I'm a damn good fighter. 27 battles now, never lost one." I sat on a stump near him and nodded. "The thing is," he went on with a weary grin, "what people don't realize is, we sometimes get tired, we great warriors." I shrugged. It was only natural to get tired after a day on the battlefield. The warrior sighed deeply and waved over a wench who carried a bag of wine. After he'd had a long drink, he handed her back the wine sack swatted her on the rear, and watched her walk off. Not just tired from a day on the field, no. Tired in your bones. Tired of the game. What could I say to that? I said nothing. Sometimes, Bard, I wonder what it would be like to have someone who loved me. I glanced at his young squire, who I knew worshipped the warrior. The squire never blinked. He just continued his work of removing armor. He was now down to the sweat-stained leather. The warrior hiked a thumb at his squire and continued. No, not like that. I love this boy, and he loves me. I'd kill anyone who harmed him, and he would do anything. Anything I asked of him. But that's not what I'm talking about. I mean the love of a woman. The warrior looked down at the ground. He suddenly looked lost. His voice dropped. And I don't mean a wench for the night. I mean... He shrugged and didn't finish his sentence. I thought to myself that any woman of this kingdom would kill their sister to marry him. And as if reading my mind, the warrior looked up at me. True, I could have any lass I want. But they don't really know me, do they? Not all of me. I want a woman who knows my heart and my soul and loves me despite my best and my worst. This was the real gold men searched for, often without knowing. He fell quiet as the squire pulled off his shoes and went to the warrior's tent to clean and polish. For an hour, we sat in silence. The warrior, in almost a whisper, said, "What I want is a home. Not just a house, but a home, Bard. A home." He spat in the sand and looked at me from the corner of his eye. "If I had that, Bard, I'd give all my gold and treasure to go there now. To go home." The next day, a stray arrow, shot by a wet-behind-the-ears archer, found its way through a joint in the warrior's armor and killed him before he'd ever had a chance to swing his sword.
Oh, that's so good. They manage to mix storytelling and music so well, don't they?
Yes, they really do.
They do. And now we'd like to bring you a very powerful poem written by Pádraic Mac Piarais called Misha Éire, which means I Am Ireland. Misha Éire by Pádraic Mac Piarais.
I am Ireland. Misha Éire. I'm older than the old woman of Beara. Great my glory, I who bore Cuchulainn the brave. Great my shame, my own children who sold their mother. Great my pain, my irreconcilable enemy who harasses me continually. Great my sorrow, that crowd in whom I placed my trust died. I am Ireland. I am lonelier than the old woman of Beara. Isn't that just beautiful?
Oh, it is. It reminds me of that Four Green Fields song Sinead O'Connor did. I think that comes from a much older song.
Yes, that was written by Tommy Macken in 1967.
How do you remember things like that?
Because I have a brain that remembers music. On the subject of elderly women, are you ready for today's story?
Yes, let's get into it. Today we've got a wonderful story by Willie Meikle called One Spring Eve. Willie has written for us before. I don't know if you remember, but we performed his story, The Last Silky, in last year's Midsummer Show.
Yes, I do. That was a superb story and captured the tragedy of the Fae beautifully, didn't it?
Oh, it did. Well, in this story, he tells us about the strange events that occur in the life of an elderly woman one spring evening. Willie is an amazingly productive writer who has my constant admiration. He writes some very disturbing horror stories. But see what you think of this one.
Why don't they just go away and leave me alone, she thought, but didn't say it. That would be impolite. Her life, all 78 years of it, she tried to live up to her standards. Always be polite, never shout, always comport yourself with dignity. But sometimes it was hard, especially when your son-in-law was of the opinion that old age meant you should be treated like a 2-year-old. You were automatically deaf, and you were not to be trusted on your own. He was at it again.
John, come away and leave your gran alone. You'll tire her out.
As if she wasn't capable of a few minutes' play with the boy. Hadn't she brought up 3 children of her own? And not the easy way either. They were always going on about how hard life was today. They didn't know the half of it. Did they have to queue for hours, ration book in hand, just to get a couple of eggs? Did they have to walk home in the dark in fear that a light might bring a bomb down on their heads? Had they had to stand by helpless as their eldest son died of pneumonia through lack of medicines? She knew the answer to all of these. But she mustn't complain. Her life had been easier than her mother's, which had been easier than her mother's before that, and so on. Back to Roman times, she supposed. It was the way of things, that was all. Sometimes she wished that the way of things was a bit more exciting, that she could tell them all to just go away, that she could leave everything behind and go, just go somewhere, anywhere, apart from these few square miles which have bound her whole life. She realised that Dick was looking down at her.
Are you all right, Gran?
She wished he wouldn't call her that. It only made her feel even older. I'm all right. Don't fuss over me, I'm not a dog. She saw the look he gave over his shoulder to his wife, eyes wide in amusement. She had to do something, otherwise she was going to scream in frustration. I'll just go and put the kettle on, she said, pushing herself out of the chair. No, don't worry, Mum. We're just leaving, her daughter responded. She tried not to show her relief. There was a flurry of coats and handbags and umbrellas were found, a brief wetness at her cheek as she was kissed goodbye. And then they were gone, leaving her alone once more. She was always guilty about the relief she felt when they left. They were her only family, and you were supposed to feel happy when they came to visit. But recently she just wanted to be left alone. Too many people had been fussing over her. The butcher who insisted that her meals would be delivered to save her the walk into town. The postman who always waited until she answered the door just to make sure she was okay. The doctor who always called twice a week. It wasn't as if she was an invalid. It had only been a little fall. She hadn't even broken any bones. Ever since he'd found her at the foot of the stairs, Dick had been trying to get her to move down to the town to stay with them. She'd refused point blank, and he couldn't understand why she was so angry. She'd been born in this house. Her mother had been born in this house, and she wasn't going to leave it, no matter how much she might want to. She had her duty, and she wouldn't leave, not until they came to take her out in a box. Nestling back in the armchair, she looked around the room. the clutter of a long life surrounding her, pride of place taken by her wedding photograph. Tears welled up in her eyes as she started to fall asleep, dreaming of John and the long years which separated them. She woke, bleary, tired and stiff, still sitting in the armchair. The light above her shone hard and bright in her eyes as she struggled to sit upright. Outside was all quiet, and the clock on the mantelpiece told her that it was past 4 o'clock in the morning. The noise, the same one which had just woken her, came again, rustling and crackling from just beyond the kitchen door. Groaning, feeling the old age which had settled into her bones, she pushed herself out of the chair, teetering unsteadily at first as the blood rushed back into her legs, causing them to tingle and tremble before she was finally steady. The noise came again as she headed for the door. The kitchen lay in darkness, only a stray shaft of moonlight illuminating a piece of faded linoleum. Outside the door, there was only a wall of silvery blackness. She couldn't make out any details through the slightly warped glass, but as she peered, something moved smoothly and silently behind the glass. Fox, she thought. Many times over the years she had watched them from her upstairs window, seeing them slinking through her garden as they stalked some small prey. They never ceased to bring a sense of wonder and a sense of jealousy. She envied them their freedom. The old door handle rattled as she touched it, a small, almost insignificant noise, but she knew it was enough to scare away anything that might have been there. She opened the door anyway, just in case. The lawn stretched out before her, silver and grey in the moonlight. The beech tree overhanging the garden at the far end rustled slightly in a sudden breeze. But apart from that, all else was still and quiet. She turned her back to go indoors, and the noise came again. A whispering, and a rasping, and a crackling. It was coming from under the hedge, over in the left-hand seed bed. There was something there, something swaying in the stray moonbeams which made their way through the foliage. She tried to peer into the black shadows, but the night was too dark, and her eyes weren't what they used to be. She moved across the lawn, feeling the cold seep through her carpet slippers. Where the day before there'd only been dark brown earth, there was now a profusion of thin silver shoots. The noise she heard was their growing, thrusting themselves up through the soil, cracking as their leaves unfolded and stretched upward for the moon. She leaned forward for a closer look, seeing the silvery lightness of the leaves, thin black veins. Her heart beat heavily in her chest, thudding its beat into her ears as she realised that these were not leaves. These were something new, something rich and strange, something wonderful. Her eyes shone in the moonlight as she stretched out a hand, and just as her fingertips threatened to brush a shoot, the silence was broken by a laugh. A girlish giggle. The moon went behind a cloud, darkening the shadows and banishing the silver shoots into darkness. She looked around, but the garden was all blackness, all silver leached away. She stood still, scarcely breathing, feeling the cold eat its way to her bones, but not wanting to move, afraid to break the spell. And she was rewarded. The cloud moved on and the silver returned, spreading away from her across the lawn, hitting the beach and causing its branches to light up in a white, blinding, radiant skeleton. The laughter came again, but she was unable to pinpoint its source. She walked across the lawn, eyes fixed on the tree. Small, shadowy buds had formed on the branches. And as she got closer, she could see them sprout, like in a time-lapse film, opening and blossoming into long, fine, diaphanous leaves which glowed with their own inner light. And there, high up in the branches, a brighter light. It was a boy, about 10 years old, but like no boy she had ever seen. He sat high in a fork in the tree. His silver hair fell in a long swathe to below his waist, and his eyes sparkled like diamonds. He seemed to be wearing a cloak made of tiny leaves, and he glowed silver and clear blue and white all at once. She reached up a hand and was about to speak, but another cloud blocked out the moon, and the scene faded into blackness. Small tears of frustration welled up at the corner of her eyes. She did not notice that her legs had gone numb with cold, nor that she had no feeling in her fingertips. She waited, eyes raised to the clouds, waiting for a break in their sullen darkness, hoping and waiting. The cold sank deeply into her, slowing her heart and thickening her blood, until it thudded, slowed, then thudded, then slowed, barely reaching the extremities of her body. And still she waited as the cloud hung heavy overhead. Time passed as she prayed for a wind, a breeze, the hand of God, anything to let the moon shine again. And finally she was answered. The laughter began first, high and clear and beautiful, just as the darkness parted and the silver streamed through the garden in an explosion of blue and grey and silver and white. It was too much for her old eyes. She blinked twice and raised a hand to shade them from the glare, then stopped. Her hand was grey and white, radiating pale glimmers of moon dust. She could see her veins pulsing darkly, could see the small crystalline diamonds of her skin writhe and dance in the cold night air. The cold finally took her, and she fell backwards, full length onto the grassy spikes of the lawn, her eyes full of stars. She heard a movement, a padding of tiny feet, and she looked up into the face of the boy. His eyes watched her, sad and lonely, as he stretched down and placed a feather-like palm on her forehead. She felt the cold spread, slivers of ice piercing her brain. Suddenly she knew what he wanted. She strained her neck in order to lift her head. One last look at the house, her house, that now sat dark and empty, a prison waiting in shadows. She looked up into the deep black eyes and saw a question. She nodded only once. He pulled and she parted, and now she was young again. The two young people giggled and danced in the light of the moon as the first light of dawn spread in the east. She had one last look back at the old thing she'd left behind on the grass, but it was soon forgotten as they chase the darkness into the west.
Do you know that brought tears to my eyes when I first read it?
Yes, me too. It was absolutely amazing story. I just knew we had to read this one.
Oh, yes.
There's just so much wisdom in our old folk. I love the way Willie brings together the dead and the fae.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, Willie, for sharing that story with us.
Yes, thank you, Willie. We really appreciate it, and I'm sure our listeners will.
Oh, yeah. Moving on, then. Do you remember we told the story of the children of Leah?
Yes, that story had more than its fair share of tragedy and beauty, didn't it?
It did. Well, our next piece of music has been recorded by the amazing Celtic vocalist Sora and retells the story of the children of Leah.
Take flight over the hills beating the time. sung for so long as they leave rocky shores flying west with the sun. And I watch from the land I love my past come undone. Oh, children of Lynn, where have you gone? The hills, they are bare, but echo your song.
And that was The Children of Lear by Sora, which we believe will be on her forthcoming album, Heartwood, which should be available in May 2009. You'll be able to find out more details on her contributor page on our website. Details in the show notes.
Now it's time for our regular visit to the Dragon's Head.
Yay!
And as usual, we'd like to say a big thank you to Andy Guthrie, our resident Scottish Shanachie, for this tale.
Yes, thank you so much, Andy. Oh, it's a cold night tonight.
It is. You'd think it was heading back into winter rather than spring, wouldn't you?
You certainly would. Here we are. I must admit, I could do with a nice warming drink.
Yep. I hope Duncan's chosen a spot by the fire.
Oh, I hope so too.
Good evening to you, young'uns. Have you brought me out for the chill?
Good evening, Duncan. Gary's at the bar now. Are you well?
I fell to middling, lassie, but the cold, it seeps into my bones, you can. And then they black bag sore bones, tell you rheumatism. What do they know? When do they ever work the fish? That's what I say.
Here we are, folks. Evening, Duncan.
Hello, laddie. You was telling me the computer folks like my story.
That's right. A lot of people have written and said they loved your tale of one, eh? Have you got something for us tonight?
Yes, we're really looking forward to it, Duncan.
Well, you give them folks a wave for old Duncan, would you?
We certainly will, Duncan. Thank you.
I wanted to tell you about Bera, the Queen of Winter.
Who's Bera?
Ach, stop your tattling, lad. Did you know he's ready to interrupt the story and its telling?
Sorry, Duncan.
That told you, didn't it?
It did. Okay, sorry, Duncan. Carry on.
Right. That's good and proper. Now, Bera, she made our mountains and our hills, and she made them as she was stepping across Albar, and giant rocks fell through her apron. And it's a craft to shape them with her mallet. A big hammer, you ken. And she's the mither of all the other gods. Her summer's calls are the Kailach, the old woman, you know, and we'll be in her sight now till the fires of Beltin are burn bright. Anyhow, is there a chance of another dram, laddie?
I'll get him in, Duncan.
I just wanted to say to you while he was gone, lassie, that you're as fresh as a May morning, and twice as pretty.
That's really sweet of you, Duncan, but...
Nay, lassie, listen. You see, while Bera watches all the darkness of the year, 'tis the summer maiden that watches all the heat of it, and ye have the touch of her green mantle and bonny flowers about ye. But the true mystery be that young and old, one and the same.
Oh, I see.
Here you are. Now, where were we?
I was just telling yon lassie here that she's born to dance through the heather, lad.
You're just an old flirt, Duncan.
Aye, well, that may be true, but I have more about Bera to tell ye. This is a rhyme that me ma taught me when I was knee-high to a dray horse about her. It goes, I have heard your thunder, Bera, by the hill and mountain top. I have seen you when Angus was in the glen and the snow was on the grass. When the mists and the raven cry, Bera, thunder hag. When the dying humans fall, I have heard your sighs. When ice is on the poles, I've seen you on the summer day, clad in green, wee primrose in your hair. Queen of all the flowers there, and in the tree, the raven whispers, your son is everywhere. Bera, Bera, Queen of Alba is.
Hooray, sing us another one, Grandad.
I think that'll be all for tonight. I'd better be going.
Thank you so much, Duncan. We'll walk with you up the hill if you don't mind.
If you please, lassie.
Thank you very much again, Duncan. We've learned a lot.
Aye, and glad I am. It's a shame some of the other young ones didn't. Let's be off before I'm knocking some heads together.
Andy's an amazing font of knowledge about Scottish lore, isn't he?
He is. And we're so lucky that he's sharing his stories and poems with us. Thank you, Andy. Another visit to the Dragon's Head in our next holiday special?
I really hope so. Should we have another piece of music?
Yes, what have you got in mind?
Well, this is something a bit different and really rather lovely. In respect to our listeners in the Southern Hemisphere who've had the autumn equinox on their doorsteps, have a listen to Catherine Duke and One Autumn Day.
Thank you.
That was Catherine Duck with One Autumn Day from her album Visions and Dreams. And wasn't it beautiful?
Yes, it was, all dreamy and floaty. She describes herself as mixing the elements of ambient, electronica, Celtic and world. What a talented lady.
Yes, and thank you, Catherine, for allowing us to play your track. You can find out more about her in the show notes or on her contributor page on our website.
Sadly, we're coming towards the end of our show now. But before we go, let's have some listener feedback. We've received an email from Kent who says,
I stumbled across your pod show while I was playing around with iTunes.
Yes, a lot of people find our show in iTunes, but there are other ways you can get it. Just check our website for details.
I listened to one episode and then had to go back and download all of them. It's a great way to hear the mythology as it was originally intended.
Thank you, Kent. That's a really lovely thing to say. And of course, you're right. The Celts passed on their beliefs and history orally.
It leaves me wondering about some possible connections to Norse mythology. Because, well, let's face it, there has to be at least some degree of cross-pollination from way back before the written word.
Now there's a thought. Obviously the Vikings came in towards the end of the historic Celtic period, but they had ancestors as well who would have dealt with the Celts.
That's true. Good question, Kent. So if any of you bright sparks out there know something about how the cultures intermingled, why not come along to our forums and tell us about it? We'd love to know.
What else does he say?
I remember reading in one obscure book many years ago about a group of people called the Black Norse, who apparently landed on the western shore of Ireland and burned their boats to discourage anyone from trying to return home. Sounds a bit like the landing of the Tuatha Dé, if you ask me. Coincidence?
That's interesting. I wonder what that book was. Has anyone else heard of it?
Keep up the good work. I haven't caught up to you yet, but when I do, I'll be waiting impatiently for each new episode.
Thank you again, Kent, for your great feedback and very interesting question.
Yes, thank you, Kent. And let's hope some of our listeners will know the answer. And now, drum roll, please. Our first audio feedback from the new voicemail service that you can find on our website.
Yes, we're really excited. Let's listen to it.
Hello there, Gary and Ruth. It's Jodie.
Hi, Jodie.
Hi, Jodie.
Just wanted to say, love the site. The new technology is totally beyond me.
Oh, I know, Jodie. A lot of it's beyond me too.
But I'm happy to see it and to use it. So congratulations and keep up the good work. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Jodie. And yes, we'll keep going as long as we can.
Oh, isn't that nice of her?
It is.
Thank you, Jodie. Lovely to hear from you. Now, shall we have a couple of promos?
Yes, absolutely. You know, we have had a few questions now about language learning resources.
Yes.
Well, there are some great free computer resources offered by a company called Byki, B-Y-K-I, which stands for Before You Know It. In fact, hopefully all you iPhone and iTouch owners will have caught our St. Patrick's news item and got your free Byki Irish app free on the App Store. Anyway, they've been kind enough to send us a little bit of information about what they do.
Okay, sounds interesting. Let's give it a listen.
This year, celebrate St. Patrick's Day by learning some Irish Gaelic. Transparent Language offers both premium Irish Gaelic products and free Irish language and cultural resources. Start with Byki Irish 4.0, a powerful and personalized language learning system that locks Irish Gaelic words and phrases into your memory so that you can recall them perfectly and remember them forever. Play games, perfect your accent by comparing it to native speakers, and test yourself. It's the best way to start learning Irish, and you can download the Express version for free at Byki.com. That's B-Y-K-I.com. Get more free vocabulary and share your language learning with the community at Byki's List Central. Transparent Language also offers a free Irish Word of the Day service. Get your daily dose of Irish in your email through an RSS feed on Yahoo, Twitter, MySpace, or iGoogle. Find out more at transparent.com/WOTD. Learn more about Irish language and culture at transparent.com/learnIrish.
Now that sounds really useful. I've seen you using the free software as well. It sounds really good.
It is. It's flashcard-based, and you can hear the words that you're looking at. So, what have we got next?
Well, I thought we'd play a promo for a podio book story that sounds absolutely great. It's not about the Celts, But it is about early peoples, and it's called Searching for My Wives.
Okay, let's give it a listen.
Hello, this is William Bostock, author of Searching for My Wives. Imagine how it all began, 1.5 million years ago, this marvelous, long journey of humanity. Not many proto-humans were alive at any time back then, but all of us had souls, and souls persist. And there are souls which lived in hominids in Chesawanja, Eastern Africa, who have lived among us almost to the present day. Some souls, for instance Shimmer, his wives, Sita and Ahalya, old Shiver, Glyph and Silver, work for peace and happiness. Others, though often driven by the trickster Merc, despoil, degrade, and kill, intent on dragging mankind down. Life after life, from Kenya to the Ganges, Shimmer fights the old destroyer, but all the while he tries to find and share lives with his beloved wives. Come along as Shimmer leads migrations. Relive the waning of the Great Ice Age and the planet-wide disaster. And remember how old Kingdom Egypt traveled through a pleat in time to stabilize and rule the river plains of northern India. Re-experience Merc's dark campaign to undermine that peaceful land, and once again respond to Shimmer and old Shiver's call to arms and meet the enemy between two rivers at fabled Kurukshetra. Come relive mankind's infancy in Searching for My Wives at podiobooks.com. Thank you for listening.
Oh yes, that sounds fun.
Yes, it does, doesn't it? Well, unfortunately, that's it for us now, and we hope you've really enjoyed the show.
We do. And our next holiday special will be the Beltane show, and in our next story, due in 2 weeks, we'll be hearing more about the Great Dagda. So until then, we'd like to wish you sunny days and say... Slongeboil!
All the symbols associated with the cult of Shiva.
You okay. Can't have Inspector Clouseau doing this.
It's not Inspector Clouseau.
I know he's a Frenchman, but it did not sound like Clouseau. Some fantastic information about the Festival of Imol, and some about the Brodjit. What's a Brodjit when it's at home?
The Roman. What have the Romans ever done for us?
They gave us straight roads.
An education. No, we're discounting the roads and the education.
The viaducts.
And the viaducts.
She was smoothing the cream into her thigh. She was smoothing... Yes, that's where I was.
Down a bit.
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com. We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us a quick email or voice feedback by emailing either Gary, that's G-A-R-Y, or Ruth, R-U-T-H, at CelticMythPodShow.com. You can chat to us in the forums on our website. The show notes for this episode can also be found on the website. We'd like to say a special thank you to Kulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. We heard Haghole at the beginning and are listening to The Skylark now. You can find out more about this foot-stomping band at www.sfhounds.com. And thanks again to Diane Arkinstone and Kim Robertson, whose music has been used for some of the incidental music in this podcast. You'll find links to their websites in our show notes.